to these events. And it is that I think what you very wisely said is like an addiction to that moment of having your breath taken away, either literally or metaphorically, by a connection to a story that you didn't know that you would be connected to necessarily, or in just having your mind blown by the power and the beauty of, you know, great work by great storytellers.
Hello, and thank you for joining us for the Woodstock Film Festival Let's Talk Film podcast. I'm your host, Adam Shartoff. The Woodstock Film Festival is a haven for networking with high-caliber industry members, voting members of the Academy, filmmakers, musicians, and fiercely independent artists. The 24th annual festival takes place September 27th through October 1st. Be sure to keep an eye on all of our newsletters and social media for lots of upcoming news-breaking information as it pertains to the upcoming festival. I want to introduce today the actor Thomas Sadowski. Thank you for joining us. Thomas is Tom. Do you go by Tom, Tommy, Thomas? What do you prefer?
Yeah, whatever. You can call me Tommy. It's fine.
All right, Tommy. You know, is maybe best known, of course, for starring in The Newsroom, but has also done countless independent films and festival films. He's got an upcoming independent film starring opposite Patricia Clarkson called Lily, about the equal pay advocate Lily Ledbetter. Is that a good way of describing it?
Yeah, Lily Ledbetter was a really tremendous equal pay pioneer. It was the first piece of legislation that President Obama signed into law was the Lily Ledbetter Equal Pay Act, which she fought for over the course of her life. So we're making a movie about it with the incredible Patricia Clarkson.
And I'm sorry that you have to work opposite Patricia Clarkson. It sounds rather unfortunate for you. Speaking of which, you know, here's somebody who is really dedicated also to the independent film. I mean, Patricia Clarkson, right? We should get her.
Oh, yeah, for sure. For sure.
I mean, she's done some major film. Obviously, she gets Hollywood opportunities and still returns to doing independent films.
Yeah.
It's not mandatory for her to do that.
No, not at all. And nor is it mandatory for any of us to you know, I think that you can tell a lot about a person in terms of their dedication to craft, or in terms of their, in terms of the why, as to why they do what they do for a living, based on their connection to the independent film community. I think that there are some people who exist almost entirely in Hollywood, and who I would consider artists. Reese Witherspoon leaps to mind, you know, somebody who really gives a damn about her craft and works very hard at it. And, but exists almost entirely in these large sort of studio films. Mm-hmm. Although we did an independent film together, Reese and I
know.
An independent film together called Wild.
Yeah. That was wonderful.
Yeah. She's extraordinary. And so is Cheryl Strayed. And, mm-hmm. So is the incredible Jean-Marc Vallée, who unfortunately we lost. But, Reese is somebody who leaps to mind. But, I think that there are you can tell a lot about what a person cares about by how often they come back to independent film or if they stay in independent film. You know, this is where the really interesting work happens in terms of, like, you know, craftspeople talking about the stuff that matters, pushing envelopes, asking interesting questions, having complicated discussions, playing complicated characters, doing those sort of like deep dive story, into the humanity of humanity, storytelling that is really interesting to me. And, you know, rarely will a cape or a VFX sequence be found. And that to me is something that is really, that's why I got into this. I mean, I'm a theater guy and an independent film guy. And, you know, on occasion when TV will hire me, I do that as well. But, you know, my interest is in getting to know the human condition and telling stories about it. I just don't know what else this is supposed to be about. You know, the rest of it, the bigger sort of phantasmagoria bacchanalia around filmmaking doesn't make a lot of sense to me. I mean, we're supposed to be telling stories about people, and you know, I as much as I recognize the need for entertainment in a hard world, I recognize the need for escapism in a hard world. You know, I have a limited amount of patience for it, because I think that you can find entertainment. I think that you can find escape. I think that you can find all of those things as readily in really human stories as well. It doesn't all have to be fluff. And so I don't find myself involved in too many of those things, which, you know, for better or for worse, I suppose, probably for worse for my bank account, for better for my soul, but is the way that it is.
Well, maybe the problem isn't so much you as a actor deciding on projects as it is the industry. You know, I mean, for the better part of first 100 years, character-driven narratives were pretty typical. I mean, we just lost William Friedkin. His movies did pretty well, and most of those were about characters.
Yeah.
You know?
The change in the industry, the change in the model, you know, and this sort of this happens in every art form, right? There's nothing new. There's no new discussion that's happening here. This is what happens when commerce invades art. Mm-hmm. You know, when people decide that they want to make a buck off of a technology, you know, the art form, the way that people go about doing it gets co-opted by the people who want to make money off of the technology. And that's what's happening. And they're making quite a bit of money off of it, you know, which we live in a free market society, so good for them, you know, but the reality of living in a free market society is that, like, you know, you don't get to keep all that if we have a say about it, mm-hmm. you know? And that's kind of where we're at right now. I mean, obviously we have this industry-wide strike that's happening right now, which I think is, we're at a really, a sort of very pivotal moment in our industry right now. And I think that what you're seeing in regards to this strike, and particularly the solidarity that you're finding in this strike, and the way that, like, SAG-AFTRA is going about working out these interim agreements and sort of pushing the renaissance of independent film, has just as much to do with people being tired of, you know, CEOs making $30 million paychecks for doing very little except being gatekeepers, as much as it has to do with artists being tired of being asked to do schlock. You know, most of us aren't interested in being personalities. Most of us are interested in being artists and craftspeople. And we want to do the work that is interesting and connected and complicated. You know, the complicated, complex work that our brothers and sisters at the WGA are writing, those complicated stories that they want to dive in and tell about character, about humanity, about the interplay of people, about looking back so that we can figure out what the hell we're going to do next. You know, these really important discussions that need to happen in a society that gets to have these discussions. You know, I think that you're seeing that the patience has run out. Patience has run out with the fact that there is a very, very small minority of people, both in the WGA and SAG-AFTRA, who get to continue to work over and over and over and over and over again in these very big, big franchise movies, making a lot of money, whereas the vast majority of people in both of the unions are struggling to get by at any given moment, and are not being, you know, the gatekeepers are sort of saying, well, we're not going to allow you to have these complicated and, you know, important discussions unless you really, you know, put yourselves absolutely on the line for it. And there's a lot of pretending on the end of the gatekeepers that the audience, whatever that means, you know, doesn't want these complicated, intense, important stories which is just the most ridiculous thing in the world. I mean, all you have to do is look and see, you know, where these really successful films, independent films, you know, what they're, I mean, look at Moonlight. Does a story come more transgressive than that story in this society, in this day and age? And it was a phenomenal hit because people recognized the humanity in it and they wanted that story. They wanted something complicated and powerful and beautiful that talked to us about us.
Yeah, if you accidentally stumble into a theater and see a film like Moonlight, and then you end up leaving a changed person.
And is there anything more exciting than that?
Right. And unless you accidentally, because you're not going to get the messaging to do that, to encourage that. But if you accidentally find yourself in that situation and come out of it like a changed person, affected, it's an addictive thing. It's something that you will value and worship and want to repeat.
Right. This is precisely the reason why off-Broadway theater continues to survive. Mm-hmm. You know, this is precisely the reason why, because people go to these events and it is that, I think what you very wisely said is like an addiction to that moment of having your breath taken away, either literally or metaphorically, by a connection to a story that you didn't know that you would be connected to necessarily, or in just having your mind blown by the power and the beauty of, you know, great work by great storytellers. You don't get that from, I don't want to get into naming,
of course, but let's just say there are universes out there that
indeed. And like, you know, there are fun things to go and see, you know, watching technology change isn't always an interesting thing. Like, oh, wow, I can't believe they did that. But I got to tell you, man, like for my money, like I still sort of roll my eyes at all of it, at all the CGI and the animation and stuff. And I say that with love and respect to the extraordinary artists who are working in that field. But like, I'd rather watch people dressed up in like little Ewok outfits, because that it's tangible and your mind recognizes that it's tangible. You know, it recognizes that it's real. And your mind also recognizes when you're watching computer animation that that's not real. And like, I don't know, man. Like, I think that it's for me, I think for many people, the search for the real, particularly in this day and age, is what it's all about. You know, there's so much distraction. There's so much to take you away from the things that matter. And I think that, you know, not only in the arts is that prevalent, but it's prevalent everywhere. It's obviously been prevalent in politics for a very long time. You know, healthcare, pretty much every conceivable faction of daily life that you can break it down, there's always somebody trying to like distract you from the real. And you know, we can't advance in a healthy, unified way if we're not talking about real shit with each other. We just have to have those conversations. We have to be honest. We have to be able to look across the fence at people who we think are different than we are and invest in their humanity as well. And like, where the hell else are you going to get that? You're not going to get that in a franchise, big, you know, universe franchise sort of thing. Not anymore. There was a time when, you know, you could get some of that in those big franchise movies, but not anymore. It's all gone. It sucks.
Maybe we can, just as an experiment, you know, I'm sure that some of the Hollywood corporation executives are watching this, and maybe just as an experiment, we can swap the way we distribute films for you know, a few months. Since most of us have these large screen TVs at home, we'll watch maybe some of the franchises you've been alluding to on those, and we'll put some of those narratives, character-driven stories on back into the movie theaters, just as an experiment, and see how that goes for a little while.
I mean, it seems to me that it went pretty well recently, right? There were a couple of movies that recently came out that became a cultural firestorm because they were released, I think, roughly on the same day, which everybody would, you know, everyone would say, you can't do that because, my God, like
about Oppenheimer and Barbie.
Yeah. And like, they both have done extraordinarily well. Also, yeah, okay, there's a mega corporation that has a pretty unflattering history in regards to, you know, body dysmorphia and that sort of thing behind it. And yet there is a story that is highly character driven, told by people from deep in the independent film community who are known for carrying a whole lot of extra wonderful, deep, you know, complicated storytelling with them into everything that they do. And they did it in this movie. And that's why people are responding to it. Same with Oppenheimer. You know, yeah, okay, there's some big technical aspects to it as well, but people don't go and sit in a movie that long for technical aspects. Mm-hmm. They didn't sit in Schindler's List for as long as Schindler's List lasted for the technical aspects, for the girl in the red dress shot. You know what I mean? Like, they sat there because it's the story that matters. It's the people that matters. And that's what they're being drawn to. And I think that there is the issue ultimately that you're running into right now is that you have uncreative people in creative positions. You have people who graduate business school and are stuck into these decision-making gatekeeper positions in a creative industry, and all they're doing is counting beans, and they don't have a damn creative bone in their body. They've never been on a set. They've never gone through the crucible of attempting to create something. And they're, frankly, anybody who's making $30 million a year plus benefits is not somebody who is connected to humanity. You're living outside of the reality of that. You know, and I think that there is, you see it in the way that things are marketed, in the way that things are discussed, and the choices that are being made about what gets to be made and what doesn't get to be made. It's ridiculous. And it is so outside of the understanding of who people really are. You know, that this idea that audiences want this, so we're going to do this, that's not, it's so far removed from reality. Audiences want, full stop. To say that audiences only want X, Y, and Z is preposterous. Give people stuff. Look at the success of all this.
Lead. Be proactive. Yeah,
look at the success of all of this stuff that nobody thought would ever be successful. And like, how can you not, looking at the history of that, say, okay, we're going to continue to do more stuff that involves people, about people, complicated storytelling. I mean, this is why television changed. You know, the great thing about the streaming services was that it cracked open storytelling. And it became more complicated. I mean, you couldn't do shows that are like Succession or The Bear or, you know, any of these wildly successful shows that have been on these streaming services 10 years ago, you know, because advertisers wouldn't want to touch them. They'd be scared, you know. Well, turns out that the people want them. And advertisers were just scared for whatever reason advertisers are scared by. But like, if you're going to get into the arts, you got to be prepared to be scared. Like, this is what we do. Like, you know, you're trying to
you know, play it safe too much. Yeah.
Yeah. Then you just create crap, you know, and there's been too much crap for a long time. And I think people are fed up.
It always has been, we should say too. It's just a matter of
time. That's true. Like, I would say that it's worse now than it ever has been in terms of people's, you know, the upper levels reliance on it or belief in it. And, you know, saying like the gatekeepers need to be aware that it's just not working anymore. People on our side of the fence don't want to do it. People on the audience side of the fence don't want to watch it. You know, watching some of those franchise, the universe franchise movies just crater because people are like, come on, man, really? Like, have we dug that far down now that we're telling stories about this stuff? Like, come on. It's so obvious that people are not as dumb as, you know, the folks who are up there trying to wring every penny out of them think that they are. Stop treating audiences like they're stupid. Treat them like they're people. And, you know, that's what they want to be treated like. And they want to explore that side. They want to see that stuff. It's fun. It's interesting. And yeah, you know, every once in a while you want to go to a, you know, a John Wick or a something and, you know, just watch absolute mayhem and pandemonium and that sort of thing. But there's extraordinary art that happens in the stunt coordinating of that stuff too. Sure. I mean, those guys are badasses at their jobs. I mean, that shit's like ballet, you know, like it's pretty incredible to watch, you know, ultra violent and whatever. Everybody has their different opinions about it, but those people are extremely good at their job and incredibly creative. And it's amazing what happens when you let creative people be creative.
Thank you for your candor about all this. I really appreciate it. You're very inspiring. You're a great motivational speaker, it turns out. And you're a fan of the vinyl as well, because, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, I would be remiss if we didn't at least include talking about some of your humanitarian work, because I just think that, wow, you seem to have managed to figure out a really cool balance in your life. It's at least it appears that way. So, and I always think it's important to talk about these organizations because of the organizations need as much focus or attention as possible. So one thing is, can you just speak a little bit about your founding ambassador for War Child USA, what you do there?
Yeah, War Child USA is a founding ambassador for War Child USA, which is an organization that works with women and children in conflict regions. You know, I mean, the first thing that happens when war starts is that, you know, women and children are always the first to suffer. Always. These are the people who are treated the worst, suffer the worst, and suffer the first and the most severely over the course of conflict. And then once conflict is over and the rebuilding begins, they're the people who get helped the least and the last. So War Child is this really extraordinary organization, has this sort of incredible anti-colonialist ethos where basically we show up with resources. 98% of our staff are local to the conflict region that we're working in, which means we don't show up and start telling people how to fix their country. We show up with resources and ask. You know your culture. You know your society, you know your country better than we do. What do you want to make of it? And here are resources to help you rebuild your education system so that children can get back into school. Here are resources with microfinancing and stuff to help women and start to rebuild their communities and provide for their families and start an economy back up. You know, the way I like to talk about it is like, we're not bringing in tons of rice and putting all the rice farmers out of business. We're coming in with opportunity to help those rice farmers expand their industries so that they can help themselves. We also are a registered legal aid, a registered law firm in some of the places that we work, specifically Afghanistan. So we've helped women and children in pre this Taliban takeover go to court and get justice for the ways that they were treated, gender-based violence and, you know, child abuse and the sort of things that the horrible things that were happening. It's an extraordinary organization. The vast majority of the money donated goes right into programming. We work in Sudan, South Sudan, Uganda, the Democratic Republic of Congo, Afghanistan, obviously, Yemen, where I just was in January. I was the first American to be in northern Yemen. Wow. Yeah. Anywhere between 10 and 15 years. And there were some parts of that area that I was the first American to be in, period, which really says a lot about our cultural and our political footprint, because we had a lot to do with the destruction of that country, whether people in our society know it or not. But yeah, I mean, I think that I was raised in this industry. I was raised in this art form to believe that it is an artist's job to have an opinion, and it is an artist's job to be involved. And, you know, that if you're just sitting back collecting a paycheck, that, you know, you're missing the point, that an artist's job is to engage humanity. And there's no place that humanity needs to be engaged more than in conflict region. Right. So War Child does this extraordinary work. I mean, extraordinary work, and the programming is incredible. It's wildly successful. Our education programs in Uganda have really set the bar in terms of ways that we are able to get kids back into school and learning and inspired and growing. They continue to expand and inspire people all throughout the region. And we need help. You know, the organization needs a lot of help, not just from governments and big foundations, but we need help spreading our message from folks. So you can go to warchildusa.org and learn a lot about this extraordinary organization and the incredible work that they do. The people who we work with, like I said, 98% of which are local to the community that they are, that they're serving, are the most inspiring people I've ever met. They do this work at great personal risk. The change that they're able to make is it will literally change the way that you look at the world, to see that kind of dedication to community, that kind of dedication in the face of that kind of horror. And it's important for people to look over the edge into the abyss in that way. I come back from these places that I go. You know, I've sat in refugee camps in Lebanon. I've sat in Palestinian refugee camps. I've sat in Syrian refugee camps. I've been in Yemen. I've been, you know, Jordan. And you sit in these places and you talk to people and you come home and you realize that despite the fact that there are extraordinary amount of failings that need to be fixed here in this country, we are blessed beyond measure to have the opportunity to fix them. It's no small thing for me to be able to sit here with you and express openly my opinion, and to have the resources to be able to do what I do for a living, and make a living doing it is no small thing either. And when you have that kind of perspective, I think it changes the way that you go about your day-to-day life. It certainly changes the way that you interact with your people in your local community. And it definitely changes the way that you interact with the global community. And this is an important thing for all of us to do, regardless of whether or not we're in the creative field or whoever you are in whatever field you do. You know, whatever it is that you do, there are ways that you can interact with the community. I have my cousin's boyfriend is a restaurateur, and, you know, he works with Jose Andres, and he goes over and cooks for people in refugee situations who are crossing the border, in, you know, who are fleeing violence. And, you know, it's a way that he gives back, and it's a way that he has become aware of, you know, what and how he fits into the global community and what people need out there. It's a very important thing to do, and it's very important for artists to do. I work with War Child. I work with another organization called the International Network for Aid, Relief, and Assistance, which provides life-saving and life-changing care, medical care to children who have been wounded as a result of violence, like conflict, in the biosphere of conflict. And that's an extraordinary organization, INARA.org.
We'll definitely include links to the organization so people can check them out in more detail.
It's an important thing to get outside of yourself.
Yes.
And to get into service to people who are desperate. It also really wakes you up. Listen, politics in this country is a nightmare. And we all know that. And it's a pain in the ass. And we all know that. And whether you are one of those people who is deeply invested in the gamesmanship, or whether you're one of those people who just rolls your eyes and says, they're all the same and to hell with it, I don't need that in my life. I agree with both sides of that coin, by the way. I feel both ways simultaneously. But it's important to know that regardless of how you feel about it, it has an extraordinary impact. If you think that these people are all clowns, I don't disagree with you. Many of them are. Most of them are. You need to remember that those clowns and their clown show have an extraordinary impact on the lives of innocent people half a world away in your name. That's what's fucked up.
Yeah.
In your name. They are doing really nightmarish stuff to innocent people who have nothing. and now have less than nothing and are now on the receiving end of bombs and sanctions and all sorts of stuff that is being done in your name. You know, and it is, yeah, politics is a pain in the ass. Yeah, it's all a clown show. Yeah. Yes, all these things are true. And I don't want my name associated with the clown show. So I have to look onto the other side and say, okay, well, what can I do to help fix the mess that these people up there in power are making? And this is one of the ways that I do.
Well, we've been talking to creative Tom Sadowski here. I really appreciate making the time to come on here and speak your mind so candidly. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
And I hope we can get you to the Woodstock Film Festival.
Maybe. Oh, you better believe it. I'm on the jury this year, so
I buried the lead.
Yeah, I'll be on the jury this year. Oh,
great. We'll hang out. We'll go see some character driven stories.
I love it. I can't wait.
I know. We'll include the links of those two organizations you were talking about, of course. Can people find you anywhere else? Like if they're interested in the work you do?
No, I'm not on social media. If you want to find out the work that I'm doing, you want to follow those organizations.
Perfect. That's it then. There you go. That's it for this episode of the Woodstock Film Festival's Let's Talk Film podcast. Don't forget to please subscribe to our YouTube channel, our podcast. I think it's now on all the apps. Hit the like button. Follow us, like us, share us. And we're also on Instagram and Twitter, unlike our guest today, @Woodstock Film Festival. See you next time. Thank you.